It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. I have as my guest today, Tara Patricia. And before we begin with Tara's conversation with me, I want to remind everybody that if the show is something that you feel others should listen to, please go to my website where all of the shows are archived. Tara Patricia's will be the very top one, and that is synergyconnectionradio.com. There's also a company there named Boomers that has wonderful nutritional products that I happen to use myself. And today in the wellness climate, I guess I would say, that we're currently in, I think everybody needs to be terribly aware of what we can do personally to make ourselves healthier, to fight any virus that might be coming down the road, and to certainly overcome our current enemy, if you will, COVID-19. So welcome, Tara, and I want to introduce people to you a little bit. You hold your master's degree in psychology with 5 years of advanced postgraduate studies in both clinical and neuropsychology. And I'm not so sure that I studied much in the way of neuropsychology, but the rest of it we have in common. You're a certified life coach. You're also an international writer and speaker in the field of self-transformation. And you've had 20 years of formal and informal studies of the mind and soul. And you said that it went on superdrive after an infection affected your brain, your central nervous system, and other organs. And that forced you to go into what you refer to as a year and a half journey into heart knowing. You've also written a book called From Harness to Heals, Finding Love Within the Spin. And I think that's part of what we're talking about today, is understanding how to recover from something like you experienced using both resilience and heart coherence. So with that introduction, I'm going to hand it to you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm very excited about it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. How did you get diagnosed with something like that?
Well, that was an interesting journey, because it happened upon me at first very, very quickly, and then I kind of stayed status quo for a while, and there was some missed medical test results that would have given us a quicker lead to it, but there was other plans for me, and so it took about 5 months for these missed results to show and surface. And at that point in time, the infection, in the very beginning, they knew my white cell count was high, but they couldn't figure it out. And I had, you know, all kinds of other symptoms as well. Mm-hmm. But so because these two tests were not seen right off the bat, we kind of were off in other areas trying to help me out. Mm-hmm. And so once I got to a physician that was able to help me, after I went to doctors and subspecialists and all kinds of things, they had to actually do it from my history, because the white cell count had gone back down almost to normal, and everything was working, or it was to the point to where it wasn't really completely diagnosable just from like going and getting more test results and looking at blood work and things like that. So they had to kind of piece in together all of my symptoms over the past 5-6 months and then figure it all out. So I'll never really truly get a specific understanding of exactly what went on. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, we think this is what's happened, but here's where you are now, so how do we move forward?
So I would think it's very rare.
It's very rare. What they're assuming is I had a cancer removed from my nose a little earlier.
A basal cell or something?
Yeah, it was just a basal cell, Mo surgery, nothing, you know, very common, no big deal whatsoever. And that got infected, and it was treated topically, and it looked all well and good. So everything was hunky-dory, and we just went along my way. Mm-hmm. And what they're thinking is that perhaps that actually didn't get as resolved as we thought it was, and that's how it traveled up.
So does that mean that it was like a cancer?
No, it was literally because the spot got where they had taken it completely out, got infected.
Okay.
So they're thinking it was a bacterial infection. Okay. They're thinking that traveled up, which is what caused all of my fun.
You know what? There are so many people that do get infections.
Yes.
From and dermatologists know this,
right? Yes.
And there's
well, and my dermatologist that did the Mohs surgery, she was very thorough, and it looked fantastic. The minute it looked, you know, the smallest bit infected, she was on it, and we were taking care of it the appropriate way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was just one of those things that I honestly believe that it was really just meant to be. So
because of what you learned from going through it.
Exactly. Okay. So I had to have this infection.
And you wouldn't have volunteered for it, though.
Amen to that. I would not have volunteered for it. No.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
No.
Okay. So once the infection kind of took hold, what were you experiencing?
So I started about a month beforehand getting really exhausted. I'm a mom of three, you know, doing all the craziness that we do in our modern days and everything. Mm-hmm. So I've always been tired, but this was an exhaustion where I was really just, I would have to get up a little bit earlier than normal, get ready to go to work. Because then once I was prepared and ready to go, I had to go back into my bed and rest again for about another half hour, 45 minutes, just so I could get back up and go do my day. And so that happened for about, I'd say, 3 weeks or so. And, you know, at first I put it off too. I'm just busy. It's crazy. The holidays just, you know, happened. So whatever. But literally the day that it all kind of really began on me, that morning I woke up and I thought, no, later I need to call the doctor and go in and find out what's going on because this isn't normal, you know. So then I was at work and I just started feeling like I was going to pass out. And the feeling got stronger and stronger and stronger, and I got very weak and shaky, and went to the doctor afterwards, and my blood pressure was going up and down oddly, and she did a blood test, you know, because I was starting to get a little lightheaded. Now, I've had vertigo in the past, so I knew what vertigo was, but this kind of felt a little different, but I didn't know how to really, you know, talk about it differently because than what my experience had been, you know. So I was like, I think maybe I'm getting vertigo. I don't know what's going on. So she was thinking, well, maybe you're having some kind of like sinus infection. She's like, I don't really know the blood pressure. That could just be from stress. So, you know, we'll watch that. And so I went and I got my blood work done. And what came back was my white count was through the roof. And I have some sinus issues like most people in Florida. So she's like, well, let's go get a sinus x-ray and make sure everything's good there. And that looked perfect. So she's like, okay, so you just have some really odd symptoms. Let's go to the cardiologist. So I went to the cardiologist and did that whole thing where they monitored me for a month and did everything. And meanwhile, the spinning just really started becoming just crazy. And that happened probably, I would say within about a 2-day period, I went from a very steady world to a world that spun. I mean, I can't even begin to explain how I was spinning.
Could you even walk at that point because of the spinning?
No, I could not walk. I could not walk. I was very debilitated. And like I said, I've had vertigo before, but this was like vertigo on superdrive. It was really crazy because before with my vertigo, I had the room would spin around me, but this was the room was steady, but my head would be spinning in one direction. But then my body either spun in the opposite direction, or I felt like if you've ever been in the ocean and you pull your feet up and you kind of just float and let the current take you, know, that beautiful, wonderful feeling wasn't so beautiful and wonderful anymore, but you know, so my body felt different in rhythm than my head did. So it was just really a crazy making. And
you know what I'm thinking of are some of the rides that we probably liked as kids and don't like anymore.
Exactly.
But even the teacup at Disney.
Yes.
Because it goes around and around and around. And then when you get off, you can't walk for a couple of seconds.
Yes.
That sensation.
Yes. That sensation.
Wow.
I literally laid on my bed, or on my couch. At first I started in my bed, but then I went to my couch because it was more centralized in the house.
Right.
So if I needed anybody, I could call out, you know. And I mean, I would crawl to go to the bathroom at times if no one was around. It was just a really long...
Just to make sure you didn't fall.
Yeah, because I mean, well, I literally couldn't. And then, so then what happened as time went on, the cardiologist came back, of course, okay. And so then I was like, I'm starting to get really confused and I don't understand things as well as I used to. And and my the left side of my body is starting to slow down a bit. And so I'm not really sure what, you know, what's going on here. But they were like, well, let's go get an MRI of the brain and let's do an EEG on you and let's do these different things. And so I said, okay, we went and did that route and sent me off to a neurologist. And so long story short, I spun horrifically. And
for how long did that go on?
Well, it went on. I was finally diagnosed about 5 months after that, but it went on for a good 8 months still.
Before it stopped?
Before it. So, well, and it still isn't completely gone. My head is, it comes and goes. But my body is, I've kind of gotten used to my body a bit. I don't spin with my body, but I do have that floating sensation most of the time. So
do you notice it when it goes away, even for 5 minutes? It's like, it stopped?
It hasn't gone away yet.
It's never
really. Not in my body. Not my body. But I've gotten used to it. And it's died down. It's much more mild now. But in any case, so I went and got the, you know, did all this stuff and I lost my track of thought. That's one thing that still happened to me. I still lose my train of thought rather easily. Oh, I know. So turns out the left side of my body had I was on the 20th percentile once I finally was given the right diagnoses and headed towards the right people. I was in the 20th percentile when it came to balance and walking, and my left side had little to no adaptation whatsoever. So the name of my book is From Harness to Heels, because literally I started off in a harness and then
and
I went to a walker.
Somebody held you.
Yes, and then I went to a walker and then
eventually,
because my goal in when I went to, I had several different therapies. I had regular PT, I had a neurological PT, I had vestibular PT, or therapy. I had a whole bunch of different therapies. But when I was in my vestibular therapy, they said, okay, these are our goals. You have to come up with a goal now, or some goals. Uh-huh. And I said, my goal is I'm going to walk out of here in heels.
And they just smiled.
And they smiled and they said, okay, that's great, but really need a real goal. And I was like, nope, that's my only goal. I'm walking out of here in heels. And they're like, all right, whatever, you know. And so they wrote it out. And she was a sweetheart. She laughed at it and everything. So my very last session.
You walked out in heels.
I walked out in heels.
Did they all applaud?
They were very proud of me.
I would think so.
And they didn't even think, because it was the vestibular therapy that I ended up doing usually is about 10 to 12 sessions, they said. But I did mine, I think, I don't remember exactly, but I did mine for like probably 5 months or so. So, I mean, it took me a long time. So I remember towards the end, she said, you know what? I didn't think I was going to ever discharge you, to be quite honest with you. But I see discharge in your future. And I said, I know, and I'm going to be discharged with heels. So on my very last day when I showed up in heels, they all laughed.
Oh, my gosh. That's
they said, I knew it. I knew you were going to show up in heels, because that's been your thing the whole time.
Now, you know, resilience, that terminology.
Yeah.
You understood that when you set your goal of walking out in heels,
yes,
that actually is part of a resilient person.
Of course.
That you didn't accept that you could have anything less than.
That's right. You're absolutely right. But I do have to say that I went through my book is very real. It's very raw. And I went through a very hard time to get back to that resiliency. When it first started, I had that resiliency in me, and I kind of lost it a little bit along the way, because I mean, literally I had no breaks, because when I used my eyes, and it ends up that my right temporal lobe was damaged. I have brainstem issues. My liver and my digestive system were also affected. And my vestibular nerve in my right side was damaged along very slightly, some slight damage with some facial nerves, but that doesn't bother me usually. But in any case, so, you know, the brain-eye connection mm-hmm. is the eyes are good, the visual vortex or visual cortex is good, but the connection between the two, there's something up, and we still haven't figured that out completely yet. But great local university with wonderful brain trauma doctors. They're doing a fabulous job. But in
well, we know that cells can regenerate.
100%. And they, yes, 100%. Mm-hmm. One of my neurological therapies was I went on a machine once a week that literally forged new neural pathways around the damaged area of my mm-hmm. brain. And it was very hard. It made me worse before it made me better, that's for sure. But it really worked well.
I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story that fits that. From many, many years ago, there was a man who actually created the shunt. For children that were born with hydrocephalus.
My cousin's daughter has that, I'm very well aware of those, yes.
Okay, so his son was born with hydrocephalus, and this is probably, it could be as 50 years ago that he actually created it.
Wow.
And there wasn't anything for children at that point. They were going to die.
Yeah,
and so he thought, there has to be a way to take the fluid off the brain.
Right.
And so, fast forward, he did, create this. His son unfortunately died before it was created.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, literally thousands of children that were able to then use that shunt. But here was the interesting part. The PET scan came out years after that. So some of these children were 15, 16, 17, 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to see what the brain looked like of a child who was born with hydrocephalus, who had the shunt put in, and now we have the opportunity to look into the brain to see the color coding of activity inside the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found blew them away, because the center of the brain on those children was basically dead.
Oh, bless.
But it had moved all of those centers that needed to be used for intelligence, for sight, for hearing, for everything, had moved to the periphery.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
The centers were, because we only use, 3%
right,
of
yes,
our ability?
Nothing, yes,
and
nothing.
So the centers just moved.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The children were gifted. Many of them were musicians. They were in, one was in vet school.
Mm-hmm.
One was a scientist,
beautiful.
Going. And so it was such a gorgeous lesson that we are so much more than we think we are.
Oh, amen. The plasticity of the brain, of the brain is huge.
Huge.
And then just beyond that,
we
are so much more, like you say.
Yeah.
And where I was getting to is, in order to get to what my more was, I had to go through other things, because with the damage of the in between the brain and the visual or the eyes and the visual cortex, I was not able to use my eyes. Everything that I looked at, it just made all my spinning just go horrifically worse.
So did you keep your eyes closed?
It doesn't matter. If I closed them, they were, I was still spinning and feeling horrible. But yes, it accelerated all the spinning and everything, when I did that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just basically stared at non-moving blank things. I spent a lot of time looking at my backyard. Sitting in the back, my daughter would walk me out, and I would sit on the back yard just and watch, literally watch the grass grow for so many months, And but so my point with all that is I had no distraction whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, my world was spinning and I felt horrible, but I couldn't go on my phone and look at anything. I couldn't really, I tried because with the maddening, I can't even begin to explain the madness that spinning nonstop for that long. I mean, 1 second is too long, but that long, it was just insanity.
Mm.
So I would cheat and I would try, but then it would make it worse. I'd be like, okay, I can't do that again until I had to cheat again, because I'm human. But so I couldn't go on my phone. I couldn't read a book. I couldn't watch television. I couldn't, I couldn't do anything. I literally had no way of getting out, no distractions whatsoever. Except for just sitting with this spin.
Mm.
And so I went through some very dark periods. There was even a period, there was a night, and I talk about it in my book, where I decided it was time to go. And I was going to take myself out because I'm a strong person, but I just can't spin. I can't spin for one more second, you know? And I share how my book is written, because that year or so for me, we say a lot of times, oh, that year is a blur, right? Well,
right.
Mine is not a blur. Mine was just a void. Like, literally, I don't remember the vast majority of that year. And if I were to take my bits and pieces that I remember, I probably have about a month's worth that I actually recall anymore. But the moments that I recall were so poignant that they're vivid, you know. So what I did when I decided it was time to share my experience, which this happened in January, and I decided I would share my experience in July, I kind of went back and started to recall those poignant moments in my life.
Uh-huh.
And so in each chapter, it starts with a log that brings us back to that moment. And I'm very raw, very real, sharing what I experienced. And then the second part of each chapter is what I learned from what I gained from all of it.
Uh-huh.
Because I literally, like the one chapter I talk about in my head when my daughter Emily hugged me goodbye, or hugged me goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was hugging her goodbye, and it was my plead with her to forgive me one day for what I'm about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the log. And then what happened, and I won't give it away because, you know, that's part of
the book.
Part of the whole, well, it's part of the whole lesson.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know,
yeah.
it's a whole, you have to read it and to learn the lesson. But what I learned is about going inward,
mm-hmm.
and judgment came up from that one. I learned a lot about judgment from that night.
In what way?
You have to read the book.
Okay. Okay.
So. I have a history of childhood sexual abuse as well.
Mm.
I struggled. I had PTSD at a very young age.
Mm.
Had depression at a very young age. And suicide was kind of my best friend a lot, in a lot of ways, because I knew growing up, I probably had my first plan at the age of 8, and I knew that as long I could deal with anything, because if life got too hard,
it was your escape.
That was my escape. So
right.
It really became like a good friend,
right.
Until I realized, okay, that's probably not the best friend to have anymore.
No.
Which was many, many, many years later.
Right.
You know, and I, like so many people that have the history of childhood sexual abuse or any type of abuse, I didn't tell anyone. No one knew. So it was really my own interpersonal demon that I dealt with, you know. And so really, that was my one friend. That was my one friend that knew about it.
You know what I find interesting is, as a therapist myself for
sure.
many, many years, I had one person who had 17 personalities that I worked with.
Less.
And it was because of,
of course.
Sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Her father, unfortunately, had a bunch of men friends,
mm-hmm.
and they were a coven.
Yeah.
And they used her every month to meet their needs. And so she had all of these different personalities.
Sure.
That were her coping tools.
100%.
So
yeah.
Some people, you know, I guess, go into serious depression,
mm-hmm.
or anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Others, you know, she was very creative.
Or both.
Yes. And then she was very creative, and so she chose all these personalities.
Yeah.
And there was a little girl personality that mm-hmm. came to see me one Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and had the biggest teddy bear. I kept it for such a
Aww.
Long time. But, I mean, it was a huge teddy bear. And so when I went to the waiting room to see her, she was in a chair, and all I could see was the bear. She was, you know, she was holding it, but the bear
just,
was
you were having
there.
A session with the bear.
I was having a session with the bear.
Yeah.
So. But you never developed anything like that. You
no,
kind of, you know.
No, I did not. No, I had the depression, and I had the suicidal ideations,
mm-hmm.
and all of that fun stuff, you know, and the anxieties and everything like that.
Right.
But so that moment in the book, you'd ask me what I learned, how judgment
mm-hmm.
played into
mm-hmm.
it. That moment, You'll have to read it because it's very interesting. But it hooked up with my best friend again.
Uh-huh.
And but I learned the power in judgment.
Uh-huh.
And I learned how should I put it? I learned the importance of judgment when we're aware of it. Because so many times when we judge, it's so unconscious, it's so automatic that we just don't even realize we're judging. And so it puts us into a headspace.
Mm-hmm.
But when we bring our own personal judgments into our awareness, and we can kind of maneuver them differently,
right?
Not to give too much away, But it really changes. It's a game changer. And that was the beautiful lesson of that moment, because spoiler alert, I did not kill myself. And, you know, but I learned so much from that moment. So my whole journey through all of this is very much a journey of, you know, going back to your concept of resilience. It was the process, because literally I would sit in my backyard and spin and just spin horrifically. And then I recognized that there were moments when I actually got in tune with the spinning, and there was like a oneness with the spinning. And so I realized, you know what, I have two options here. I can go into the spin, or I can fight it. And so I figured, if I can find love for myself within this spin, then I don't give it whatever. Mm-hmm. You can throw anything you want at me, Mr. Life, because I can handle it. I can find love in this.
Yeah.
If I can find peace and love in this when literally everything is crazy around me, if I can find love in it, then I can find love anywhere. So there you go. Harness to heels, finding love within the spin. So it's an interesting journey, and it's very much a journey of going back to self-love. And because it's just not about my brain infection. It's just not about my past and my childhood. It's the moment I found sexy on my back porch. It's the, you know, the moment that I started understanding beauty differently. It's the moment that I started understanding my transitional space of, you know, I had a healthy brain. My brain is different now, but I know the potentiality of my brain too. So how do I navigate between the two? Because my experience is right here, right now. But, you know, the experience came from someplace else. And I have so much more I can still get to, but I'm still in this transitional space of this experience, you know? So there, it's so much more than just, oh, you know, look at, I had this infection that affected my brain and other parts of my body, you know? And so what happens, I got to the resiliency like you're talking about, but then it took me to a place, it forced me to go to a place of heart knowing, coherence. Because coherence or cognition is a knowing. And so, because when part of my brain was slowing down and shutting down, I wasn't thinking. I couldn't process things. I didn't understand what people were saying. I had a hard time, and sometimes, not all the time, but I had a hard time relaying back what I wanted to say. But definitely, I could not process thought any longer. So I was forced to find my resiliency back again. But I found it in a different way.
And a different path.
A different path, but in a different fashion.
Okay.
My resiliency changed from the old resiliency of, I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to tackle it all, and I'm going to keep going through it, and by golly, it ain't taking me down. Like, you know, I'm not going to do that. It was more of a, okay, this is my teacher, and I'm here for a lesson, and that's beautiful. I can utilize this. So my resiliency changed in its way, you know.
So if I use the word process,
You can use that all day long with me. Yes, ma'am. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So you had a starting point, and it was a different starting point than anything you'd ever experienced.
Absolutely.
And now your guides, your teachers, are saying, Tara, we want you to process life a little differently.
Yes.
And they slowed you down enough where that could happen.
They said, Tara, you are down. You're done doing it this way. And you are so ornery and so headstrong that we really just literally got to knock you out. That's what they said. And so, and it's what I said too. I accepted the mission. And I think that's so important to recognize that I said, yes, I will take this mission and I will do it. You know, because I had the option of finishing it that night.
Right.
But I chose not to.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to do this mission. So my head was literally, my brain was literally taken out of the equation. I could no longer process anything in my head space, in my brain. And so I was forced
to move
all
to your
the
heart.
Years, yeah, all the years of my studies, all the years of working with clients, all my years of I joke and say I've been both on the couch and in the chair, you know, because I've given it and I've received all my years of therapy experience, all my years of just life I could no longer process through my brain. It had to go to my heart.
Isn't
and
that
I
interesting?
I really had to just integrate everything at my heart. And my heart is what really opened because the heart allows. Mm-hmm. The mind thinks, the heart allows.
Right.
And it's a beautiful lesson I learned from a friend that you know as well,
yes.
Ms. Tess.
Yes.
Yes. So, but learning it was one thing. Integrating it was a whole nother ball of yarn, you know. So, but coming
well,
in.
Nobody really wants to learn some of these tougher life lessons. I mean, that's what we have going on currently.
Right.
You know, with the racial unrest,
sure.
With COVID-19,
sure.
Is, you know, there's a lot of unrest emotionally, physically for people.
Yes.
And, you know, if we could have learned it more easily, I think we all would have opted to do that.
Yes.
But.
Well, I think, too, there's, you know, one thing I've learned is there's always a flip side to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, on one side, when we're in our head space, we call it unrest.
Uh-huh.
When we go to our heart cognition, we understand it's awareness.
Right.
And
right.
It's the process.
Right.
So it's a beautiful process that awareness
mm-hmm.
brings, you know. So I think that's the beauty of the journey I had. I think I'm hoping that's going to be the beauty of the journey that we're going through right now
mm-hmm.
as a culture,
as
a
culture.
World culture.
It is. I mean, it's everywhere now.
Yes, yes.
So.
And with, you know, with the racial awareness that's
mm-hmm.
hopefully coming to light more and more.
You know, I'm so surprised that something that we're experiencing and have experienced for 400 years, you know, as far as the racial part.
Sure.
You know, and I didn't realize that number was so huge because the United States isn't that huge.
Right.
But
right.
we've been having these issues with, you know, Black Americans, you know, for the last 200 plus years.
Right.
And worldwide for much longer than that.
Yes.
But I was so amazed that New Zealand, Australia, you know, Great Britain, I mean, we have all of these other countries.
Right.
That are staging, fortunately, it's not riots, but it's peaceful demonstrations in many cases, sometimes not so much,
mm-hmm.
but saying, bringing awareness. And
right.
in Denver, I believe it was just last night, they all held up their cell phones with the flashlight
mm-hmm.
Just to bring light to the topic.
That's beautiful.
You know, so it was a very beautiful symbolic message that had no violence whatsoever in it. So.
Well, and I think, and I, you know, I really don't want to get onto that because I can't really speak to it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell this from a podcast, but
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can from my voice. I'm a white woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I can't really speak to to the experience
right.
of an African American,
right.
you know, but I think I honestly do believe that, you know, it's gotten to where it is just because of frustration
and
those years. And so I understand where it's at also,
you know,
but not to get into it,
right.
Because
right,
I can't
is,
really speak to
right.
it.
This is a little bit of a tipping point in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Had we not had COVID-19,
because
we've had this issue for a long time,
right.
with a lot of people being killed.
Sure.
And, but we have had 3 months now of people that have been told to stay safe,
mm-hmm.
to stay in shelter,
mm-hmm.
And they've lost jobs,
mm-hmm.
they've lost maybe their homes,
mm-hmm.
they've lost their financial stability,
mm-hmm.
if they had any stability.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point that I'm seeing is, had it not been for COVID-19 and all of the frustration and anger and everything else, because most people aren't resilient and they don't come from heart coherence.
Right.
So,
I would say everyone's resilient. Not all of us tap into it.
No, that's true.
Yes.
That's true. But the fact that that happened first
mm-hmm.
and then this happened, I think the tipping point would not have happened the way it did in terms of an international event had we not had COVID-19 on an international level.
Right. Well, I mean, and that just goes to show that life happens for us, not
yes,
to us.
Exactly. And I
so,
want people to kind of hear that.
Sure.
Because in your case, the same thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe your guides said, Tara's not listening very well.
Right.
So we're going
right.
to slow her down. And she's not going to like this, but we're going to give her this.
Lucy, they did not slow me down. What they did is they came out from behind me when I was running a race, and they literally knocked my feet out from under me. And you, I know what you're saying,
yeah,
exactly.
And then landed on the ground.
They tackled me, yeah, yes, yes. Yeah. And so sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes it takes a tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a tackle. And sometimes it's not peaceful. Sometimes it's very tackling. So, mm-hmm. Yes, so... But that the beautiful thing from my experience was it allowed me to integrate everything. It forced me, not even allowed, it forced me to integrate in my heart knowing. And so then
what did that feel like when you finally said, okay, I'm going to go within and I'm going to use the heart knowing or heart coherence kind of emotion?
Mm-hmm.
So what did that feel like?
It's a very interesting question, and I don't think I've ever sat and thought about that, but, you know, I would say that it's twofold. We're human beings, human
mm-hmm.
of the form,
mm-hmm.
right? Being of the formless,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, when we're doing that dance in between. So
mm-hmm.
I would say that, you know, there was a tug and pull, a push me, pull me kind of effect going on.
Dr. Doolittle,
yes, I loved that, so yes. And so... When I would allow, and
mm-hmm.
there's the key word, allow to go into my heart cognizance, my heart knowing,
mm-hmm.
then it was very peaceful. It was very tranquil. And that's when I learned, out of all the thoughts that are going on in my head right now, which one brings me peace? There's my truth.
Oh,
so it was very much my truth that I was going to. So there was an excitement. Woohoo, yeah, she's at the truth. Woohoo, let's dance. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
There was a peace.
Uh-huh.
There was a contentment. Not happy, but contentment. There was a, to it all. And because it was like, yes. That's what the feeling was. It was very much yes. And then when I was cute little Tara, and I said, I'm going to be more human today, and I'm going to fight it and not like where I'm at. Well, I didn't have the yes. I didn't have the contentment.
Oh, okay.
I had the, oh, no, here it comes again. I'm not doing this. Oh, my God. And I still, you know, and I'm going to be very honest. I've been very honest in my book. I'll be honest here. I still have moments where I go to, oh, my lands, is this ever going to end? Am I always going to have this? Am I ever going to get this back? You know, I don't talk about how I feel. I sit in front of you right now, and I look like I'm experiencing a normal, steady world like you are, but I'm not. Things are different for me. The listeners can't see, but I'm writing down on a little pad of paper whenever I have a topic that we kind of scooch off from, so I remember to get back to it because
mm-hmm.
my train of thought isn't where it used
mm-hmm.
to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I have things, but you know, when I go away from the heart cognition,
mm-hmm.
and that was the beautiful part. I really experienced the yes, the contentment while I was in there,
and that felt good.
Oh, it felt divine. It was wonderful. And I use that word purposefully, by the way. And then when I would go away from it, it didn't feel so hot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt the no. I felt the what ifs, the oh my gods, you know, part of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, now, I'm so much better where I'm at and everything, you know, but my head is not spinning as I sit here with you. I have a very steady world, which is fabulous and wonderful. I just still can get to a point to where I say, you know what, I'm sensing more of a no in me right now. So that clearly means I've left my heart, my allowance, my cognition of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so where does that go back? And that's where, again, I say, of all the thing, all the voices in my head right now, which one brings me peace? That's my truth. That's where I need to go. Because
mm-hmm.
it's just like a dance. When you do a dance, if you start off on the right foot, you end up on the right foot, you know? And I was a band nerd. I played the flute and in the parades. When you're marching, if you recognize that you are on the wrong foot,
you have a
little shuffle.
Yeah,
a little
skip.
And
yep.
you stop,
yep.
and then boom, you're back on the right step. You
exactly.
know? And so that's what it's like right now for me. I go, I'm kind of playing my little flute, my piccolo, walking
mm.
down the road, and everything's good. And I go, I'm not feeling so good. And I notice, you know what, I'm off step.
Mm.
So now I've learned to get back to my yes,
uh-huh.
and when I'm in the no, all I have to do is a little shuffle.
Okay.
And then I'm back in my yes again. And okay. it's really just opening so much more. It's so peaceful. It's still life. It's still life. And that's one of the things, and again, I talk about it in my book. You know, when I finally made my journey public in the beginning, before I even really had complete resolution on a lot of things, I was still in the middle, but just to my own, you know, kind of circle of friends, people would say, "You're so positive. You're so, you know, such an inspiration. You're this, you're that." And I understood, and I was so thankful. Great group of support with all my friends and everything. But it kind of baffled me because I was like, I'm not positive though, because I'm so having to face the hardships that I'm going through. So I'm not facing that. So I don't see myself as positive, you know? And so what I really took away from it all and I recognized was, you know, there's infinite potential that's sitting here. And so I'm experiencing one thing, but I don't want to engage in that any longer. I don't want to be there anymore. So I'll do what I have to do to take care of myself and handle what I have to handle. But in my heart and in my mind, I'm not going to focus on it anymore. I'm going to focus on what I want to engage in, what I want to do. So sometimes it was like the littlest itty bitty little pebble of something, you know, that I could focus on that brought me back to my truth. But as long as I did that, then it was really opening so that, because it would change my trajectory.
Right.
And how my experience would go.
Let me ask you a question then. Because I talk a lot in, you know, my own book about thoughts creating reality. So when you stay focused on what you didn't want to experience and you were fighting it to try to get back to some sort of normalcy, that created more tension.
Absolutely.
For sure. And on a cellular level, then our bodies
are
responding to that. And so you were getting a double whammy of what you didn't want.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you would go into heart coherence, then that place felt very loving.
Yes.
It felt very supportive. That's where your content was. That's where your joy was.
Yes.
And so your body was being taught that, you know, Tara, come over here.
Yes.
Because this is the reality that you want.
Yes.
And so
this
it was
like the real reality.
It was. It was the real reality of what you could have and what you've always been able to have.
Yes.
But you were so busy fighting, you know, the demons or whatever out there that was an alternate reality. And now you had a choice.
I did. I could choose.
Yeah, you could choose.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. And so it, you know, and that, like everything else, is a process. And I'm not going to sit here and be like, look at me, I'm like this, you know, guru of this or this, you know,
but
wonderful.
But you're an example. I guess what I want to say is you're an example that everyone has, that we always have a choice.
Yes.
We can choose to fight the demons and be in anger and be
and call them demons.
Yeah. And be, you know, in this angst all the time.
Yes.
Or we can choose to kind of go within.
Yes.
And find that peaceful place.
Yes.
And be there.
And that's what I say. I had no choice. Once I decided, that's it, I'm staying here. I had no choice but to go inward and elevate myself above my circumstances.
Right. And that was the heart.
And that's, so it's, you know, it's funny you go in
to go out,
you know, and
so how true is that though?
It's so true. You go in to go out.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, very much so.
And, you know, the really wonderful thing about this process is that the whole time it's happening for me.
Right.
And I've really come to recognize that. So, you know, in my hardest moments where, and I'm not saying they're not hard, because they're hard, but they're not bad. See, there's the difference. So that's the whole getting back to empowering judgments and bringing it to our awareness and everything. No, they're hard, which is a different story. But
that's how we grow, too.
Yes,
though.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I was going to say. In our some of our hardest moments, that's when we get our best results and our most wonderful gifts.
Our most wonderful gifts, for sure.
You know? And so had it not been for that hard moment, I would never have had this beautiful gift.
You know, how many times have you heard, because, you know, you were in the field as well.
Yes, ma'am.
But how many times have you heard somebody say, I would never have wanted this disease for anything or this accident for anything. Yes. But through it, I discovered this. And, you know, it's changed my life for the better.
That's why I recognized probably about, you know, I don't know exactly, but 2-3 months in that this is my teacher.
Yeah.
This is not my enemy. This is not something I need to say, hey, you know, up yours too or anything like this is my teacher. It's come to teach me. And so, you know, surrender was my very first step to my true, to reconnecting, to returning to my self-love. It's not that I discovered it or no, I'm sorry. It's not that I created it or found it or anything like that. It's just, it's always been there. I just returned to it. But surrender was my first thing and recognizing that this was my teacher. Because think about it. Go back to elementary school, and we've all had that teacher. We were like, oh, I hate this class. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But when we come back as an adult, we go, you know what? Bless that teacher. Miss Jones, she was quite a teacher for me. I learned a lot from her.
And we all learn from different kinds of teachers.
Because we're all having our own individual experience.
Exactly.
So
and
we
Tess
can't
talks
learn.
About that.
And she does. Well, you will hear a lot of what I say kind of sounding, you know, off what she's done because we worked together for so long before all this happened that I can't help but to have that test thought inside me, you know. But it was really the integration and just learning so much more, you know, through the process of all of it. And I really learned and I keep saying I talk about it in my book, but I mean, literally there's so much of what I learned and integrated in those pages. But I was given, I learned to, and I'm in this, I learned a different kind of way of meditation. I did it with my eyes open because when I closed my eyes, the spinning was weird. I don't know how to explain it, but I couldn't focus. So I really got into like kind of just a vegetated state and I would literally just stare at something solid ahead of me.
I would call that a trance.
Yes, very much so. And I have used that word before. Very much it was a trance. And I would get into it very quickly. And one time I was trancing. And I'm not going to call it meditating anymore. I'm going to call it trancing. One time that when I was trancing, I heard the word. I felt the need to really just let the idea of healing come over me. And I recognized right away that I wasn't talking about my body healing. Because that's just gonna, my body knows what it needs to do. So it's gonna go to where it's gonna go. And so I'm not even gonna focus on that right now. But this was about healing my mind and my heart. It was about taking that resiliency and letting it go back to my heart cognition, my heart knowing.
So would you say that that might be more of a spiritual healing?
Well, it cannot not be because I'm a spiritual being.
Exactly.
So of course it is, you know, but there was a, but it was a, it was a, it was more than that because I'm
thinking,
more than that.
You're right. I'm thinking an integrative kind
it,
of a
yes,
healing.
Yes, it was.
Because it would be the spiritual, the emotional, the mental, and the physical.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's kind of what the show's all about.
Sure.
But when we
sure.
integrate that kind of healing, then it's in every aspect of our
it
life.
It is. And the whole journey took me from flatland and took me into what I lovingly have known to call moreland. And because it took me into my moreness.
Okay.
And in my moreness is when all of those things you just spoke of, that's when those really occur and solidify.
Right.
They come together. They're symbiotic. They're everything. It's just, it's natural because that's who we are. We're multifaceted. We're multidimensional. We're all of this. So it comes together with that.
I quite often liken, you know, the intricacy of who we are as this beautiful tapestry.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's woven with all of our experiences. And if we don't have very many experiences, or if they're mostly more negative experiences, the colors aren't as vivid. They're not. But we can have beautiful experiences, bright blues and yellows and greens and oranges and reds. And we can also have, you know, the darker ones, you know, that are maybe the grays of life.
And the blacks.
Or the browns.
And
or the
browns.
Blacks. Yeah.
Yes.
But
those are what gives it dimension.
It is. It's
and
what
you
takes
don't see the beautiful colors, the light pastel-y ones, if it weren't for the dark ones. So the dark ones, it's funny because I just caught myself doing it. I said the beautiful colored mm-hmm, ones. Mm-hmm. Well, they're all beautiful.
They are.
They're all beautiful.
There's not a sunset that I've had lately because I go to this one particular park that's close. And, you know, we watch sunsets there. It's amazing, this whole community.
It's my favorite thing to do in my life.
I know. There's so many people that come in their golf carts or walk or whatever in this little town, and they all come to the water to watch the sunset. And every sunset is different. And there's one lady that I met about a week and a half ago now, and she had something like, I think she said 30,000 different pictures of sunsets.
Wow.
In different cameras, and she had put them all, you know, in one place on her computer. But she said there wasn't one single one that would look just like another one.
Isn't that beautiful?
And so I think that's what our life is that we're a lot of different sunsets over however many years we live, but each one is different.
Absolutely. And it's that going back to the heart, the allowance, the heart, you know, I call it the heart mind, to be honest with you, because our soul, our core, our heart, our essence, our I am, whatever you want to call it,
is there.
And we actually think there.
Yes.
I mean, we feel, we think, we do, we create.
Yes.
You know, and so going back to the whole using your mind to create, your thoughts to create, the beautiful thing about that, because I think sometimes that can be a scary idea to people who are kind of new to it or not completely understanding
it. You mean that they're not creating with their head, they're creating with their heart?
No, well, yeah, but they think, oh my gosh, what do you mean I'm creating with my thoughts?
Uh-huh.
Oh, what if this happened? If I just thought that, oh my Lord, it's happening. But the beautiful thing is that the heart is actually, our core is actually way stronger and way more powerful than our thought.
Right.
So we can have those black thoughts, those brown gray thoughts, and make the contrast and allow, going back into that space, allow for us to get into the beauty of the colors.
Yes.
You know, so it's you know, it's not necessarily, oh my God, I just had a horrible thought. So, oh great, now I'm creating from there. I'm manifesting from that thought. Fabulous. Right. Good me. You know,
right.
It's not about that, because our heart mind is so much stronger.
Right.
That it gives us permission to have those thoughts sometimes, because we have to have those thoughts sometimes. That's part of the process.
Right. Yeah. It is. And a lot of it has to do with a healing process.
Well, you know, and that's where I was headed with it. With the whole healing, they gave me the acronym I heard in my heart mind, happily earthing and loving.
Oh, really?
Yes.
How interesting.
And I had just had my family buy some plants and some dirt for me, because I was like, there's an empty pot right here. Mama's going to stick her hands in some dirt, and I'm going to get to back to the earth a little bit, because that's always very soothing to me and very centering. So I thought that's what it was at first, but they were like, no, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean I want you to go and start digging and playing with the worms. You know, they said, it said, I kind of think more, or let it go more. And so I recognized it was about, if I can get into my allowance, my heart cognitions, and use that resiliency that you're talking about to get there, because sometimes that's what it takes. But it's also in just letting it be. And notice I didn't say letting go. I said let it be.
Let it be.
And that's different. But it's getting us back to the point of happily earthing, meaning going about our life, doing what we have to do on this earth, and loving. Loving myself, loving others. So I'm happily earthing. I'm being an earthing happily with my contentment, with my heart cognitions.
Right.
And that gives me my resiliency.
Right.
And then I'm loving. Right. So it was a really beautiful journey.
And I think the fact that, you know, all of that is, you know, positive experience, growth experience. But also giving yourself permission from time to time to have those lows and not beat yourself up.
Because you have to have those.
Yeah.
It's not that you're going to. It's not that you can. Or you have to. They are part of the process. You have to have those. So when they come, you go, oh, there you are, my little teacher.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. What are you going to show me today?
Right. Do I really want to learn this? But okay, go ahead.
And if you don't want to learn it, we get into fear and that says, I'm not ready for it yet. Please don't give it to me. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And then you get to say, you know what? Oh, thank you. We're going to put that on the back burner. Uh-huh. You get to say, I'm not ready.
Right. You know, I talk about Tess for just a second here. But,
of course.
She and I were doing chakras. Oh, probably, over a year ago.
Okay.
We were talking about chakras. And she was coming from an angelic position of what chakras meant, which were, I'm not going to say a lot different, but somewhat different than where my knowledge came from.
Gotcha.
And we got into the root chakra.
Mm.
And she struggled, as I recall. She had to actually stop, and we had to let her go, and then she had to come back on another day to talk about, you know, the root and the sacral and the solar plexus, because those were the three that she was the most uncomfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And the knowledge from angelic sources wasn't coming through because she had to process herself. So it's so, so interesting how sometimes we get these learning experiences.
Right.
And they're gifted, but like you said, with the idea that if you're not ready, it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. We'll come back to it when you're ready.
And that's the allowance.
Mm-hmm.
And that, my friends, is peace.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
One day I may be, one day I might not be.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, because that's all I can live in.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm not ready.
Not
and
ready.
That's okay.
And that is okay.
And there's the judgment piece.
Right.
I'm not going to judge it one way or the other. I'm going to say, this is where I'm at, and that's okay.
And that's okay. So that's a good place probably for us to end today.
I think so. That's okay. Let's end
that
there.
That is okay. All right. So I want you to share with everyone how they can find you and where they can find your book.
Okay. Well, I'm on YouTube. I'm on Instagram. I do a bunch of different things like that. But probably the easiest way, because it's all in one place, is to go to my website.
Mm-hmm.
It's www.innerpathcoachingservices.com.
Okay. And I'm going to put that, just so everybody knows that's listening, I will put that on the show note part of the archive shows. So when you see Tara's show, at the end of the synopsis will be a link to her website, and that'll make it a lot easier. But go ahead and give it one more time.
Innerpathcoachingservices.com.
Innerpathcoachingservices.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Lucy.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure you'll be back another time.
Sounds like a plan.
It does. All right. So everybody out there listening, again, if this is a show, which I suspect so many people are going to relate to this one, please send them to synergyconnectionradio.com. And Tara's show will be the very first one at the top of page, could be 10 by then. But there's 9 pages for sure right now. I'm just not sure where we are in that page as to whether it'll be number 10. But it will be the very top show. So please send them to synergyconnectionradio.com. And again, if you do purchase anything at all from the Boomer website, if you use my name, Lucy, in the promo code, you will receive $5 off of your order. And of course, today, I think every little bit helps. So go out there and make it your very, very best life. And we'll see you next Saturday. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.